Our podcast will begin in just a moment. InvestTalk distribution and production made possible by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. Having a smart and competent investment advisor is one thing, but are they accessible when you have a concern or a question? There are many important differences with KPP Financial. Find out more about it and their investment programs when you're ready on investtalk.com. Just click on the Investments tab. End of commercial. Now today's InvestTalk.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Friday edition of InvestTalk. It's October 14th, 2016. And we're all about promoting above-average investing for the average investor. Today, experts think these bonds have upside despite their historical risks. The case for including high-yield bonds in your portfolio. We'll take a deeper look at that. High yield, they're also known as junk bonds. Don't let the word junk scare you. But we need to talk about it. You know what it is? It's something, you know, people think high yield or junk bonds and think, oh man, those things are really, really risky. Well, yeah, they're more risky than regular bonds, but you need to look at each one individually. We're going to go over that. We're going to talk about that in depth today. So, but I want to hear what you want to hear. You know, I'm going to talk about different topics, but I don't want to talk about things that are not interesting to you. So you kind of drive the show. Now, yesterday I announced the topic for our next Saturday Morning Wealth Conference in San Jose. Investing is all about looking ahead, you know. We learn what we can from the past, but you know, you don't invest in a rearview, looking through the rearview mirror. You invest looking through the windshield forward. So, title of the conference is How to Prosper in a Year of Change 2017, because the year is changing. Things are changing. It's November 12th in San Jose. We'll be focused on global politics that can disrupt markets. Business culture has come to be defined in events dictated by everything from technology to theology. Companies have little choice but to adapt to these new dynamics. What matters to the investor? How do you interpret all these changes? We're also going to look at central bank policy. You know what it's been for years now, quantitative easing everywhere around the world. Is that going to stay the same in 2017? I'm not buying it. I think that's changing too. And finally, I'm going to spend some time to try to convince you, me, Justin, Jason, the three money managers at KPP Financial, are going to spend a little bit of time to try to convince you that it might be a good idea to transition from growth investing to value investing. And we're going to discuss why. Now, these Saturday Morning Wealth Conference always include a question and answer period toward the end, but you can ask questions during the conference. I mean, it's not like we're just going to dictate it. It's give and take all through the conference. But most people find them very entertaining and interesting and hopefully educational. How to Prosper in a Year of Change in 2017. November 12th, San Jose. And now because it's Friday, I like to skim over the weekly premium newsletter I send out. I send it out every Friday. And most of the week saw the market down, with the U.S. dollar gaining a lot of strength. Earnings are the primary cause of the market weakness, you know, starting with Alcoa, remember? Just a few days ago. And what about what's happening in China? Did you see? I'm going to talk about that a little bit today. It's going to be a talking point today about China. So I'm also discussed it in the newsletter as well. A couple of stock ideas sections. We mentioned two funds. I think the funds were interesting for you to understand how to learn the ebbs and flows of the market. In the portfolio management section, we talked about some of the more important statistics that you look at. When you're reviewing a possible buy position, what should you look at? What kind of numbers? What are the most important numbers? That was in the portfolio management section. Consumer Watch, I asked the question and answer it. Will your phone catch on fire or explode? Even though it's not a Galaxy 7, will it still do that? mean, do you think Samsung's Galaxy is the only problem out there? Mm-hmm. Now, if you'd like to try the newsletter for a month, that's four issues, by the way, then go to investtalk.com, scroll down to the bottom of the page, and it's just $9.99. And we'll refund, we'll refund that after the first month. If you don't want to have it, you're not completely satisfied, yeah, no problem. I think you will like it, though. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. What happened today in the market? What went on? Well, the market was actually up. How's that? The Dow was up 39 points. The NASDAQ was up 1. And the S&P was flat. Now, the market was up over 100 and something points in the Dow at the beginning of the day. This was a day in which the market kept giving back and giving back and slowly going down and finally gave back all the returns by the end of the day. Not a pleasant experience, but that means the market is just not doing well. Earnings are coming in, and there's not a lot of good news necessarily. The earnings for the several of the big banks' earnings look better than I expected. Weren't great, but better than I expected. I thought they would do worse. Today, we're going to talk about a number of junk bonds. It's going to be our main talking point, but I also want to talk about China's import exports and their economy a little bit. I want to talk about. I always, you know how the markets are seasonal? I want to talk about October and what historically happens in October and what the market does if October has a bad period. The market very often bottoms in October. I've said this before and over the years. Very often bottoms in October. I can't tell you maybe it's already put in a bottom. I can't tell you that. But what happens after that? If it does put in a bottom in October, what's the rest of the year look like? Finally, should the Federal Reserve raise the rates faster? I mean, they have only raised it once in last December. And all the talk is they're going to raise it only one more time in this December. And that's only two. But should they raise it faster? And I'm going to talk about some of the arguments some other people have that they should. And they're valid. I agree with them to a large extent. So that's what we're going to talk about. 888-99-CHART is our number. I'm glad you're with us today. There has been widespread complacency in the stock market that looks to be has changed in the last few weeks, right? Is this a signal of a coming correction? And what would be the cause? This is a topic I expand on market commentary. If you like, take the look. It's right there on the homepage of investtalk.com. Want to schedule a speculate about tomorrow's market? Let's do it together. Tomorrow meeting Monday. I'd love to hear your comments. 888-99-CHART. You can join us right now.
Hey, guys. This is John from Phoenix. I just heard you talking to somebody that asked a question about Procter & Gamble, whether they should buy it or not. I own it. And I was wondering, I heard you say that you wouldn't buy it, you'd wait for a pullback. Would you sell it and then buy back at a lower level, or would you just keep it and hold? And it is a cool holding, so I was just wondering what you would do in that situation. Thanks for your show.
Well, that's a good question. I would hold it. I'd keep holding it. It's a core holding. PG is solid, and yeah, it's a little overpriced, but, if you bought it lower, you're getting higher than a 3% dividend yield. That's what it's yielding now at this high price. And PG is at $88.43, up a tad today, up 19 cents today. And I gave my reasons why about PG. I like PG. I like it a lot. But if I was going to put on a position of PG, I would wait because it's had a very good run this year. And generally, stocks give back some of it. When we have a correction, and maybe we are starting it, maybe we're not. I can't tell you for sure about that. But if we are, you'll get a nice, decent, pullback, and then you buy it. I'm hoping that we'll pull back to the 200-day moving average, which is around 82. And it's only about 7 or 8% down. It would be great if we get in the low 70s, but I just don't know if it's going to go there. Not the way it looks anyways. But I am a little concerned that the sales, corporate sales every quarter have been falling, you know, slowly, while earnings are still going up. But the dividend's not in any danger. PG, Procter & Gamble, you can't go wrong with that company. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. So should you consider junk bonds in your portfolio? Now, junk bonds are also called high yield. High yield means, you know, they pay more in dividend yield, or, well, they don't call them dividend, but they pay more in yield, bond yield, than investment grade or higher bonds. Now, when you talk about junk, it's a question of how the bond rating agencies see the stability of the company paying its bond. Okay, they see that it, when you talk about junk or high yield, they see the company's stability as being weaker. Okay, than a investment grade or not. Investment grade is triple B or higher, you know, A's, triple A, double A, single A, you know. So they say those bonds that are rated triple B or higher are high quality bonds, and you don't really have much worry about them defaulting on their bond. Where they think junk bonds or high yield bonds are those investment grade or lower than investment grade are much more dangerous. Now, if you think about it, it depends on the company, does it not? It depends on the economy. It depends on how big the company. If it's a tiny little company issuing bonds, those are much more at risk than a big, huge company that's had recent hard times but probably will survive. For instance, you know, maybe a Sears, Kmart. Okay, they've been rated poorly, but they've still been paying for years now, and they've been rated poorly for years. So, you know, you look at the ability, you as an investor, you know, look at the ability of the company to survive, because that's really what you're concerned about. They'll pay the bonds if they survive. They'll pay it. So you look at their ability to survive for as long as your bond is there. If it's a five-year bond, can they survive 5 years? Two-year bond? One-year bond? You may consider a shorter-term bond, you know, that may be paying junk bond yields of, you know, 4% or something, because you're pretty confident that they'll last a year. I can't tell you don't ever buy junk bonds. I think that's foolish. It depends. And isn't that not helpful to you when I say that? It depends. You have to look at the underlying company. Remember how bad the rating agencies were during the financial crisis when they were talking about bonds. They had high quality bonds, AAA plus for financial institutions went out of business. They're not right. Those don't just buy what they say and say, oh, that must be true. They're wrong all the time. Back to my old saying, experts are always wrong, because they are. So don't think that junk bonds can't be in your portfolio. They can. It depends on the underlying carrier, the underlying company. I'm Steve Peasley, and no matter what your money question is, I'm here for you. It's not all stocks and bonds, you know. We don't have to talk about all that. Anything financial, where's the best place to retire to? What's an umbrella policy? You know what that is? Do I need a family trust? Do I need a trust? Let's talk about it. 888-99-CHART. That's our Invest Talk 24 hours, 7 days a week, listener live.
Hey, guys. Steve or Justin. I listen on podcast. I have a question about looking up fundamentals on FinViz. I was wondering if there is a correlation between cash flow per share and earnings per share, and also if there's a difference between book value per share and price to book. I'll take my answer on podcast. Thank
you. Yes. The second one, yeah, obviously it's pretty much the same thing. Book value and price to book. You know, it's just how much the price of the stock versus the the value of the company, and is it a, you know, overvalued or undervalued? Usually, if it's 1-to-1, meaning that the price to book is 1, meaning that the stock price multiplied times all its shares equal the book price of the company, and it's not overvalued or undervalued. So that is obvious. When he's talking about FinViz, which is a website that has a lot of information, it's all free. And the best part about this website is, I think, the search engine, because it's pretty robust for being free. So if you're doing research, okay, and this is, you know, this is one place you can go if you don't want to spend money on buying research. Like, I have to buy data. I don't buy research. I buy data, and then I do my own research. But this is a place that gives you a lot of data points that you can study. And when you're looking at the value of earnings and sales, you have to look at, in the web, in our article today in our newsletter, there was return on assets and return on equity, ROA and ROE. You got to know what the difference is. You have to know what makes a company valuable. Some companies have lots and lots of debt, and that's not a bad thing, because that's how they make money. Many companies should have no debt, but they do have debt. And some companies, big companies, have lots of debt, and they pay dividends, and that never really made a lot of sense to me. Auto companies are famous for it. How to look and evaluate companies is a lifetime of learning. And you're never going to get it right. Never. Think about all the Wall Street pundits out there. If they were all so great, they'd all be billionaires, wouldn't they? And they're not. So that tells you how difficult it is. This is a very difficult endeavor to. But you got to start with a good understanding of the fundamentals of the company. The fundamentals, you start there. Good questions. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Should the Fed raise rates faster? That was a point brought up by billionaire Wilbur Ross. He thinks they should be raising rates much faster than they have, and I agree with them. They raised the rates last December. Actually, frankly, they should have raised the rates before last December. And then raised it a couple times this year. Get those rates up. Why are they so afraid to raise the rates 0.25%? 0.25%. Now, Ross thinks that we're going to be in a recession in 18 months or sooner. It could be a little later, but he thinks 18 months. He is convinced that if Hillary wins, that we're going to have it sooner because she'll raise taxes, and he thinks a recession will follow. Of course, he doesn't know that. He thinks even if Trump wins, we're going to have a recession fairly soon. And his big complaint about the Fed is that they've been giving off for now a couple of years very uncertain signals that causes a lot of uncertainty in the market, in the economy. You know, they say they're going to raise rates and they don't raise rates. And you've heard me mention that the Fed has lost a lot of credibility because of their wishy-washiness on the rates. And you've heard me say, and he was making this point, that the Fed doesn't really have any ammunition to fight the next recession. Ammunition meaning higher rates, normalized rates, that they can reduce at the proper time so that they can boost the economy. But they've had money so loose for so long that it really doesn't help the economy. And now everybody's so used to it, they're so used to these very low rates, and now when they even hint at raising rates, people panic. Now, if our economy cannot handle another 0.25% raise, the economy is a lot weaker than we all think. You're telling me it can't handle that. The Fed is telling us it can't handle it. Last meeting they had, nope, can't raise rates. Why? You can handle 0.25% then. They certainly can handle 0.25% in December. If it can't, then we're a lot worse off than we thought we were. Maybe we are. And that's what the signal is from the Fed. Maybe we are weaker than everybody thinks. That certainly doesn't give us anybody confidence. It does not. We're open to your money questions and comments at 888-99-CHART. That's how you get through, and you can do it right now. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley, and this is Invest Talk.
Part of the Invest Talk experience is visiting our website, investtalk.com. And one of the reasons for a visit is Steve's market commentary. Just go to investtalk.com and scroll down to his market commentary. If there's a question you want to ask Steve or Justin directly, there's a way podcast subscribers can be part of the program. InvestTalk is produced each week at 4 p.m. Pacific Time. If you call then, 888-99-CHART between 4 and 5 p.m., you can connect and ask your question, even do a follow-up question. It'll be good to hear from you. 888-99-CHART. You're listening to Invest Talk for Friday, October 14th. Even the most valuable of company perks can be ruined by high retirement plan fees and crummy investment choices. How to tell if your 401k is a dud? That's next time, but you may have another topic in mind right now. You can get through with your question. 888-99-CHART is how to reach us.
888-99-CHART. Let's take another question.
Hey, Steve. This is Chris from Mississippi. I think robotics and AI are, you know, what we need to be looking at for the future. And I've been kind of, ever since it started, that robo ETF, R-O-B-O, and it just keeps on climbing. What do you think would be a good entry point on that, or do you think it would be better to just kind of cherry-pick some of those robotic-based companies within that ETF and kind of build your own robotic portfolio section? You know what I mean? I probably got $20,000 if I'm going to dump in that sector. What do you think would be the best way to do that? Thanks. Have a good day.
Well, for me, I would be looking at the individual companies. It is ROBO is the symbol, and it's the Exchange Traded Fund Seeking Results corresponding to the Robo Global Robotics Automation Index. Okay, so you're tracking an index by buying this in that sector, which is a good way to invest in a sector that is very speculative. Now, there are a lot of robotic companies out there that are not speculative. They're pretty good size, or doing well, but if you don't know a lot about analyzing stocks, you buy this ETF in this sector because who knows who's going to be the winner in robotics and artificial intelligence in the future. No, it's very difficult to pick that winner or those few winners. But in an ETF like this, you probably will have it. For me, I would buy individual stocks in this particular sector. But again, can you analyze them and pick the winner? That's pretty difficult. So I kind of like buying the index for most people. Now, where's a good buy point? I think you need to wait till it at least comes down to like maybe 24, 25, somewhere in there. It's at $27.46 now. And, that's only 2 points or so, but that's about 8%. It's already fallen 8%. So I think you want to wait for that pullback. It looks like about 24, 25 is a really strong area that it will pull back to and hold. It has gone up nicely since the beginning of this year after falling like everything else in January. It fell pretty hard from 24 down to 21, and that's what, 15%? The market went down 10. This fell down a little bit more than 15%. When that market, so that tells you it's a volatile, even though it's a tracking an index. ROBO, and I agree with you. The future is going to be in robotics and AI. That's common, and it's just going to get more and more and more important in our economy. That I agree with. China, they reported this week. They reported on the imports and exports. Their exports dropped 10%. That was hugely more than they expected. Okay, and then top, make it even worse, imports also fell 1.9%. This is for September. Now, why is that important? Because China is a very large economy, and they influence greatly all of Asia and part of Europe, too, because one of China's biggest partners in exports and imports is Germany, and Germany is 20% of the EU, and if the Germany is not exporting a lot of stuff to China, mostly cars, by the way, then that means the German economy is not doing great, and we already know that most of Europe is not doing very great. So this is kind of important. And what is really very telling to me is that China's overseas shipments, once the great generator of growth for them, has declined like 14 of the last 15 months. And China, of course, started a QE, and they're going to try to, depreciate their yuan. You know they're going to continue to try to do that. So they're like everybody else. Everybody wants to export their way out of economic doldrums. Well, if everybody's trying to do it, it ain't going to work very good, is it? Now, economists feel that September's import, which was down 1.9%, import declining may show a continued weakness in their domestic economy. So, their domestic economy is not recovering like everybody thought it might with their QE-type programs, which, what if they didn't have them? What would it look like then? And how much more debt can they put on? They're going into debt, too. Everybody thinks that they're so wealthy, but you know what? They've been eating into that. So we'll see. Anyways, that tells me both Asia and Europe are still not on the recovery path yet. What does that mean for us? That means that our GDP growth is still going to be pretty anemic. Anyways, each month I help a limited number of our listeners answering important questions about their retirement portfolio. How much cash on hand do you have? Do you have exposure internationally? Should you have it? Are you very well diversified or poorly diversified? Are you cutting losses and letting your winners run? What are you doing? Now, if you're not near our California offices, I can meet with you via Skype or telephone. It's easy. If you'd like to set up a time, just go to investtalk.com and click on the Invest Talk tab and then Portfolio Review.
When you're an InvestTalk insider, you'll receive a monthly economic and market forecast. This document covers the economy, U.S. equities, foreign equities, fixed income, commodities, also recommended portfolio weightings. Join this free program. Be an InvestTalk insider. Sign up for free on InvestTalk.com.
Hi, Steve and Justin. This is Genevieve calling from New York, and I am a podcast listener. My question is, I am 27 years old, and I currently contribute the maximum amount I'm allowed to contribute for the year into a Roth 401k. I've also recently cut back on some spending habits and have a little bit of extra money to put away that I'd like to put into a IRA account. I don't know if it would be better to be put into a traditional IRA account or a Roth IRA account. My first instinct would be to put it into a Roth IRA because I'm relatively young and I expect my salary to grow from here on out as I'm currently in the 25th income bracket. However, I don't know if I should put it into a traditional IRA, as I'm also thinking about my retirement income strategy 40 years from now. So if you could kindly give me your opinion on that would be great. Thank you for your thoughts, and I'll listen to your answer in a future podcast. Thanks, bye.
Okay, at 27 years old, that's not relative. That means you are young, okay? You're not relatively young. You're young. And that's great. You're saving money. I mean, that's pretty impressive. I'm impressed. And I'm glad you're doing a Roth 401k because you should at that age. And I think you should do a Roth IRA, regular IRA, as opposed to a traditional IRA because of your age. And you won't get any tax write-offs, for that. But you're so young that you want years and years and years of growth that when you do take it out when you're old, you'll never have to pay taxes on any of that growth. I like that. The younger you are, the better I like a Roth. Now, at some point, you may want to transition to a regular IRA, but not yet, in my opinion. I think you stick with Roths. Okay?
Yeah.
Good question. Congratulations on saving them money. It's time for Invest Talk 101. Important terms and practices that should, you know, that you should really know about. And I get questions time and time again about different kinds of stock orders when you put an order in to buy or sell something. For instance, what is a limit order? Now, our friends at Investopedia.com, which I have mentioned before, I really like their website, Investopedia.com, because they really help you with definitions. They define it this way. A limit order is a take profit order placed with a bank or brokerage to buy or sell a set amount of financial instruments at a specific price or better. Because a limit order is not a market order, it may not be executed if the price set by the investor, you, cannot be met during the period of time in which the order is left open. Limit orders also allow an investor to limit the length of time an order can be outstanding before being canceled. Would you like me to shorten that for you? A limit order is an order that you put in to sell or buy a stock. I want to buy or sell 100 shares of XYZ at a specific price or better. That's what it is. That order stays in for as long as you say you want it in. It could be the day, could be a week. Depends also on your brokerage house. That may not allow you to carry it overnight. You got to know what your brokerage house allows. So it's a limit order is an order from you to buy or sell stocks, usually, at a set price or better. Okay? That's Invest Talk 101. Do you have questions about limit orders or stop orders or stop limit orders? Do you know what a market order is? Give me a call, 888-99-CHART, or you can click on Contact Steve on InvestTalk.com.
Hi, my name is Dave from Palo Alto. I listen on the radio, and my question is, do dividends get paid before earnings are calculated? So, like, in a price-to-earnings ratio, are dividends subtracted first, and then the earnings that are used after the dividends come out, or is it before? Thank you.
Okay, dividends are paid on the ex-dividend date. For instance, a company can announce a dividend today that will be paid on November 5th. Okay? So you got to own the stock on November 5th to collect the dividend. That's the ex-dividend date. Ex-dividend date. Now, when you talk about earnings and earnings calculated after or before the payment of dividends, well, earnings are calculated every quarter, okay, and it depends. They can announce the dividends anytime. Dividends don't have to come out of earnings. It could come out of savings. They could come out of, they don't necessarily track with earnings. They don't. You can have no earnings and they still pay a dividend. You can. So don't try to mix apples and oranges here. So don't think dividends are paid after earnings and that's where they derived them. Not necessarily. So earnings are earnings and dividends are dividends. Let's keep them separate. 888-99-CHART. Thanks for the question. It was a good question, by the way. 888-992-4278. The stock market is setting itself up for a possible monster year-end rally. This is Mark Holbert. He wrote an article today that I'm quoting from. And I like Mark. I think he has good points. Now, what he's talking about is that October usually marks a bottom for the market over the most past umpteen years. Very often marks the bottom of the market. The market turns around in October. So he did a little study. And over the 120 years, if the market puts in a bottom in October, how big is the rally afterwards? And he was studying the Dow, obviously. And from the lowest October close through December 31st, the end of the year, the average gain when the market put in a bottom in October, 6.8%. The average gain. Now, the question is, have we put in a bottom yet? Where is the bottom? So you can study this stuff in hindsight, but to know what it is in today and the future, who knows? It's hard to do that. But you do know if we have a big correction or a decent correction in October, that bodes well for a year-end rally. I hope we do have it. I want it. That would make me feel much better about a year-end rally. So we want to kind of, I'm prepared for it. I've been prepared for it, for a pullback. But if we don't get it, you can't just stay out of the market. Matter of fact, you shouldn't be completely out of the market. Just because this tends to happen, and it has happened every time for the last 120 years that the October put in a bottom and the return to the end of the year, 6.8%, doesn't mean that it's going to happen again. It doesn't mean you should be out of the market because the market's going to put in a bottom sometime in October. What it does mean is you prepare yourself for the possibility. You know, I like to play the probabilities, not the possibilities, but the probability is we are probably going to have a correction. I think it may have already started because we're down 3 or 4% from the highs. And I'm hoping that that's not the end of it, but it could be. So what if it is the bottom? What if we already put it in? Well, on average, the market will go up 6.8% from here. See, I don't know where the bottom is. No one knows the bottom. He's just studying history. What if the bottom is 20% lower than it is right now? Then the market goes up 6.8% to the end of the year. Boy, that's not very helpful, is it? You know, only if you are out and you bought out right at the bottom. And please learn this lesson. You and I and nobody can pick the bottom or pick the top. We don't know where that is. You're listening to Invest Talk. Here's an investing truism. It's risky not to know your risk tolerance. Why? Because of your age or situation, you may be open to taking more risk with the opportunities for more gain. But it turns out your present portfolio is way too conservative. How do you know? So you need to know what your risk tolerance and what kind of risk you're taking. Try it. Take our risk analysis tool for free on investtalk.com.
Hi, this is Gary. I'm calling from Massachusetts. I listen to your show on podcast. I have a question on a stock. The symbol is F as in Frank, ISV as in Victor, FISERV. I'd like to know your valuation for that stock. Thank you very much. Have a great day.
Okay, FIS as in Sam, V as in Victor, provides integrated information and electronic commerce systems and services to about 13,000 clients worldwide. It's a $22 billion company out of Brookfield, Wisconsin. That's interesting, out of Wisconsin. Kind of unusual. They are a very steady company. Their earnings have been steadily growing year after year after year for years. They're going to make $4.44 this year. That's a 15% increase from last year. They're going to make $4.98 next year. That's another 12%. Sales are very steady, between 4 and 5% growth every quarter, quarter after quarter after quarter. Pretty impressive, steady company, and that's why it's expensive. This stock has done very well the last couple of years, and it started to slow down. I mean, they started to hit a bump in the road in August, right? Beginning of August. It topped a little bit above $110 a share, and today it's 100. So it's down 10% from that top. And why? They don't play a dividend, by the way. The reason being is the PE is 24, and the five-year range is 12 to 27. So that you can tell it's near its high. So it's going to make almost $5 a share, and it's a $100 stock. That means a forward PE is 20, right? And remember, the range is 12 to 27, so it's still expensive. But it probably should be expensive because of its steadiness. I just don't know. So what I would suggest is any correction in the market, you buy. You buy. It looks like it's trying to put it in the bottom here at $98, and right now it's at 100. So it's bouncing off of $98, and it's done it 2-3 times now in the last month or so. This could be the place where you want to buy it. But I'm looking at the overall market, and I think we're going to get that correction. And if we get it, there's no harm or foul for you to wait a little bit longer to see if we do get it here, at least a month or so. And if we don't get it, then just buy it. Hold on to it. It's a very good, solid company. Return on equity is 31%. I like 17% or higher for return on equity. It's just 31%. Pretty high. It does have quite a bit of debt. You might want to check into the debt level and see why it has it. But it's not a problem because it has really good cash flow. But you might want to know why. That's FISV, Fiserv, Inc. Good company. Let's give the last word today before we go to Ray in Brea. He called our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.
I've got roughly 20,000 sitting in CDs coming due to mature. And rather than put them back into, roll them back over into CDs, would I be better off going into some type of a bond, a high-yielding bond at this time? And maybe which direction should I look?
Well, if you do that, you're moving from no risk to high risk, going from a CD at a bank that's insured to a high-yield bond or junk bond that has no assurance. So if you're willing to take the risk, fine. But you know, CD is massively different in risk level than a bond, and a junk bond is even a higher risk. So I don't know if I would do that. Depends on you. Will you feel comfortable with that? And what junk bond are you going to buy? And I feel very uncomfortable with people buying bonds themselves because they really don't understand. All the ins and outs. Do you buy it? Do you know what par means? Do you know what yield to maturity means? Do you know what interest rate rising, if the Fed raises the rates, what kind of effect it will have on your bond? Do you plan on holding it to maturity or selling it if it goes up or down? What's your plan? There's so many things you got to discuss, and you got to understand the underlying company and its financials. It's very difficult. In our balanced income program, we buy 50% bonds for our clients and 50% high dividend paying stocks. But there's a lot of work when you look at those bonds. We try to stay in the high quality bonds, not junk. But there's a lot of work you got to put into it to see if you want to own them. Because you got to analyze the underlying company. Our time's up for this hour. I have a new date for individual retirement reviews in San Ramon. It's November 1st. To reserve your hour with me, just go to investtalk.com and click on the Invest Talk tab. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley, president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And for Justin Klein and everybody at KPP, I want to thank you for listening today. And enjoy your weekend. And let's meet up again on Monday.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.